The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
Attention, Galactic Collective. The Sci-Fi Geeks Club is next. Please stand by.
You can take part in the podcasts by providing feedback. Send a message to galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Call the voicemail number at 805-328-3966 or leave an audio message directly on our website, galacticnetcasts.com. We also invite you to join the Galactic Collective. All the information and links can be found at gncasts.com/galacticcollective. That's gncasts.com/galacticcollective. Now, without further ado, hear ye, hear ye! Another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is officially called to order!
I'm Dave Nelson, joining me on the host panel to talk about our favorite fantasy-based sci-fi films and TV shows is Matt Stein and JF Dubo. How you guys doing?
Awesome.
Terrific.
You know, JF, is you're so predictable. You always do the awesome.
Well, I try to bring energy to the table.
You know what? What was the this probably is going to date me big time, but back in the day on Saturday Night Live, it was Billy Crystal was a cast member. That shows you how long ago it was, and he had this character called Fernando, I think, and he was just basically a talk show host, and his line was, "It's better to look good than feel good." So I think you're taking that philosophy and kind of tweaking it to your own.
I'm not 70, so I don't remember that, but no, the philosophy behind trying to bring high energy to things is, something I'm stealing from two sources. My friend Vince, who is always, very positive, and it seems to be working for him. And I also like the attitude, at least the public persona projected by Brian Brushwood when he's doing shows, which is always high energy, very positive, very awesome.
All right. Well, maybe I will take that philosophy too and do it. And let's ask Matt. How's Matt doing?
I already said terrific.
I know you said it, but I wanted you to expand on it a little bit, buddy.
I don't know, living the dream. You get to go sit inside of a...
I see behind you, you've got a bed, you've got a clock. I mean, what else do you need?
Food.
You know, that's water. That's the only time that Matt actually spends in that room is during the podcast. That's like the spare room, right? You don't usually...
Well, yeah, my desktop is in here, though, so if I play games on my computer, then I'm in here, too. But yeah, Outside of that, I'm never in here.
Is that the special sex room?
Where's your comma? Is it the special sex room or the special sex room?
It's the special sex room. This is a room that we have special sex in.
Okay, that's what I want to clarify.
What you can't see over here is the gimp suit and the swings.
I can't see the ceiling, so I'm assuming chains and mirrors.
Going into this episode, would you lay odds that we'd actually approach the subject of bondage?
Nope.
Okay.
Bondage chamber.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. Let's move on to our guest. Our guest geek this week is the owner and producer of the Geek.io podcast network. He's also author of the book, The Chronicles of Athalor, The Heart of the Deimos. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, CJ Boat. Hey, CJ.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Real quick, before we jump into, because we already talked to you on the last episode, so
we did. Oh, I'm not supposed to pretend that this is my first time on here.
No. We're going in the order of the last one and then this one.
I understand now. Yeah, that was not explained to me by my agent.
Oh, sorry. I forgot to mention that to your agent. My apologies, sir. But thanks for coming on. Do you want to just real quick talk about your podcast network and what it's all about?
Oh, yeah. We are Geek.io, where you put geek in and geek out at geek-io.net. We have podcasts that range from movies, film, technology, news, random geekery, and including starting next month, a Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition real play podcast. Yes, that is right. We are going to bore your ears off by me telling stories to people that have never played Dungeons & Dragons before while drinking heavily.
And I wouldn't be doing my due diligence if I didn't mention that we also have a gaming podcast on the Galactic Netcast Network called The Adventure Party. I'm just saying. I'm just throwing that
out
there.
I totally stole the idea. I totally didn't stole the idea. That's how that goes.
Dude, right. One thing I can say about Geek.io, because I'm an occasional listener, is I find Geek.io to be, if anybody's interested, like the atmosphere I get from, at least from the core show, is the kind of podcast you listen to when you're doing something and you want to feel like you're listening in on your friends chatting about geeky stuff.
You know, that's a big compliment.
Yeah, that's actually kind of what we go for is we don't try and, at least not the main show. We have other shows on the network like Disney Geek.io where it covers all sorts of Disney news reviews, ranging from movies to parks and everything like that. But really, the Geek.io show itself, we really are trying to invite you into our geekiness so we can share it. That's the reason why we do such a wide breadth of things on there, from random discussions to hosts interview to guest interviews to right now we're actually doing a movie series called our Rant and Review series, where we take old horrible movies and I make all of the people who haven't seen them before suffer through them. Which is great, considering this week we're watching Cool World, and I'm the only person who's ever seen Cool World, and it's fantastic.
CJ, not to throw this in again, but you used to actually have a podcast that was kind of like that, and Matt was the victim. We made Matt watch really, really bad movies.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Terminator and Commando. Ugh.
Shut your Canadian mouth.
For those who listen to the AIE podcast, former host of it, Gomez, actually is working with us now and helping us out with the show. And it's great because he's not really into bad movies. So he approaches these things like, oh, I should have fun with it. Oh, God, what did you make me watch?
It's a social experiment is what it is.
It really is.
Yeah. All right, so we'll talk about your book at the end of the podcast, but JF, since equal time, JF also has a book that he is promoting through Inkshares. Do you want to give us a quick update on how that's going, JF?
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, I don't want to take away too much of CJ's thunder since he's the guest. The only thing that's really worth mentioning is, well, first of all, the campaign's going really well. Like, I have to thank any of the listeners out there contributed. Like, I cannot begin to explain how important this kind of stuff is, and I'm just CG will like echo my feelings on that. This is the kind of stuff that's been a dream for me for a long time, to become a writer. Not because I like the idea of the trope of being a writer, but I like writing and just want to do more of it. But the big thing about my Inkshare campaign is that, as I mentioned in the previous episode, I released a book trailer for it. I hate saying that about something I did myself because it sounds so self-serving, but it's actually kind of fun to watch, annoying to listen because I talk, but it's a time-lapse video of me drawing a robot, and it's not an amazing robot, but it's fun to see drawings happen in fast forward. So go check that out, and if you feel so inclined to thank me for putting that, just pre-order a book. Go to jfdubow.com/tadbooks.
And you can that link, you can also get information on CJ's book as well, right?
Absolutely, no, that is something that it was imperative when I created that page, is try to make sure I get as many of the people I know in the various communities I'm part of. If there's anybody else that's doing an Inkshare campaign, try to group that all together so we can all benefit from it.
And a wide variety of genres too. Like with yours, it's pretty much hard sci-fi, and then with CJ's, it's kind of a mix of sci-fi and fantasy, right, CJ?
Absolutely. For those, again, I'm going to pretend that I didn't just say this last episode. it's very much so. If you've done any of the if you've read any of the Shadowrun books or played any of the Shadowrun games, it's very much so akin to that, except that it's more fantasy than sci-fi.
Okay. But there's sci-fi elements, like there's like ray guns and stuff like that.
Oh yeah. Okay. Our awesome lead heroine, Kara, she's a technology master. She has no magic whatsoever in a world of people with godlike powers all around her.
That's sweet. That's a really interesting concept. Again, I said this last time, I've got some Inkshare credits that I might throw your way, so I might be getting two books
you
out of the deal.
You definitely should.
Cool. All right, so we decided to make the discussion topic kind of based around the genre of your book, which is a cross between sci-fi and fantasy. So we put together a list, or I put together a list, I hope you guys like the list I put together, of the movies that I figured were the best representation of both sci-fi and fantasy. So what we're going to do is just kind of run down the list, just throw in your thoughts, and particularly what you think makes them sci-fi or what makes them fantasy, and which way it kind of leans more of. You guys cool with that?
Sure. I mean, I think it's going to be a good study of what every person on the panel thinks is the distinction between sci-fi and fantasy.
Yeah, no, you know what? And I was thinking about trying to come up with this list today. I was thinking, you know what? We very much have our own personal thoughts or our own personal preferences when it comes to what we think is sci-fi or what we think is fantasy. So, you're right. Let's see where the lines blur on this. Okay, so the first one is the Star Wars saga. Definitely both fantasy and sci-fi. CJ, what are your thoughts? What makes the Star Wars saga fantasy? What makes it science fiction?
Well, Star Wars in and of itself, and even Uncle Lucas has told us several times that he's based it on several mythological things, somewhat engraved into the King Arthur mythos, to bringing balance between the light and the dark. Obviously, there's also kind of there's a lot of religious and mythological undertones to it, as well as it being an awesome space battle, spacey space thing.
Yeah. That's my favorite part is the technology, but I host a sci-fi podcast every week. So you kind of see where my likes lie. If that makes any sense. And the Force is very much a fantasy element as well. Don't you guys agree?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. It's the magic of the universe. And by the way, congrats on starting this panel with a softball.
You're right.
Yeah, I figured I'd ease you guys into it.
And then definitely easing into it.
And somebody like Matt, I know, has seen Star Wars. He's probably
once.
The least. Really? Only once?
I've seen each movie one time.
Wow, okay. What was your favorite of all of them?
The Wrath of Khan.
Well played.
I don't know. Last time I saw Star Wars movies was when the day Episode 3 came out. So what is that? 45 years ago?
I
don't know. I honestly couldn't tell you which one was my favorite. I want to, and I've kind of been trying to talk my wife into watching the original trilogy again, just because I feel like I should, the amount of time I spend with you guys. But it's nowhere near on my list of must-dos this month. So
at least watch them before December, before the next movie comes out.
But to be perfectly honest, maybe she will. You know, and she's a big Star Wars fan. She named our dog after Wicket. I didn't. So maybe she will want to go see it. So, yeah,
it's gonna be. It's gonna
make a recommendation
because she carries my testicles.
What JF?
If I can make a recommendation to you, Matt, there's a, if you look up on the internet, there's something called the machete order for the movies, which is mm-hmm. Allows you to watch only 5 movies out of the 6, skipping the worst of them, and it puts them in an order that makes them make more sense and make them more enjoyable.
Do you know offhand what that?
To be perfectly honest, if I went back and rewatched them, I would be rewatching them as like single movies, not for the entire story, because I don't really care about the whole story. I would just be going to see them for what they are.
Fair enough.
Okay, let's move on to John Carter. Who's seen the movie John Carter?
No one in North America?
I've seen it and regret every second of it.
Really? Yeah. I thought it was a great movie, actually. What didn't you...
I want to see it, but I just haven't had the opportunity, and it's not very well reviewed, so it's easy to bump off a priority list.
And I know that Matt hasn't seen it, so let's just leave it between the two of us. And what did you...
We're at this old familiar impasse again.
CJ, what makes it a... Okay, you didn't like it, but what elements make it a science fiction and what elements make it a fantasy movie, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, obviously, again, kind of a softball on the sci-fi part of it. I mean, it takes place on freaking Mars.
Yeah. And there's some technology involved, too.
Yeah, not a lot of it, though.
No.
So
it's more fantasy than sci-fi, I think.
It is the sci-fi on it is again it's kind of a softball. You don't really have anything other than just that. You don't have lasers. You don't have anything like that. But you do have you basically take like the elf tropes and stuff like that, and you turn them into Martians. For everywhere from the regular elves being one kind of Martian to the drow or dark elves being another type of Martian, and it's actually pretty much the same mythos behind it too. We all used to be one. Somebody got angry. Somebody took their tribe away, and then everything else changed. And all of a sudden, one of our members is in the Justice League, and with fire. And oh wait, I'm going back on comics again. Sorry.
It's okay.
There's a lot of Tolkien tropes in it, and it works out that way because the original John Carter books were written around the time. Actually, they actually predated the Tolkien books. I think it was the original books were written in like the early 1900s, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you're correct.
They're all public domain now, so they're at least over 100 years old.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. Avatar. Show of hands.
Yeah, crap. Fell asleep halfway through it.
Really?
Yeah. The movie sucked.
Did you get to the point where they were having the tail sex?
I think so. I know about the tail sex, but okay. The Simpsons also made fun of the tail sex. So, yeah.
I don't see many outwardly fantasy aspects to Avatar. I mean, everything is couched or attempts to be couched in some sort of, at least some sort of a self-cohesive science, I guess. Yeah, it's not like the Force, which is definitely like absolutely mystical.
Yeah, this is about as much fantasy as John Carter is sci-fi. It just kind of has that fantastical overview, but not a lot of the tropes.
Right, and the I mean the most mystical part is this whole communal spirit thing, but it's all explained by the fact that these the aliens, the inhabitants of the planet, what's it called, Pandora, are supposed to be somehow biologically linked. So even the mystical aspects are somehow linked to a scientific explanation. So I don't feel that there's much that's fantasy either in the narrative or in the world building for that movie.
Okay, let's move on to Dune. Speaking of putting to sleep, this movie, I think I've tried to watch it twice and it put me to sleep both times.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I've never actually successfully watched this movie, and I've tried many, many times.
We talking about Dune?
3 times yes. The charm, CJ. Let's right? go for 3.
Dune is very Star Wars-ish in the fantasy in the sense that it's mostly technology except for one thing that can be the force, if you will, being the prophecies and having a messianic character that has superpowers, but otherwise mostly sci-fi.
See, that's okay. That's kind of where I accept that element as being a fantasy element, is the whole, like, it's not necessarily magic. I don't know what the word I'm trying to think of for it. You know, components of monsters, magic, and unexplained forces is how I kind of describe the fantasy elements that I was looking for in these movies. And I think it has the unexplained force. Or do they actually explain it in Dune?
No, they don't. They have things. They have all sort of three things. They have the things that are definitely technological, like most of the weapons, the vehicles. Then they have something that sort of straddles the mystical and the scientific, which is the way the navigators permit faster than light travel using the spice, which is supposed to be scientific, but it's scientific in a way that's almost arcane and mystical. And then you have Muad'Dib, their messianic character, which does have what are definitely supernatural powers and prophetic powers and all that, which feels akin to the same role the Force plays in the Star Wars universe.
Okay, how about Flash Gordon? Who's seen Flash Gordon? There's people that claim that it's a good movie, but I don't know.
This is one of those so bad it's good movies to me. Like, this is so troped out and horrible that I can't stop watching it.
Did you know that they're actually working on, like, either a sequel or a reboot for it?
Yeah, from what I've heard, it's a reboot. Okay. And I'm okay. I'm kind of okay with that, because the first one, again, it's not good, but it's really fun to watch.
What are the fantasy elements? I kind of forget.
You don't really have a lot of them. It's science, how he gets into space. I mean, you kind of have, like, the Dagobah, for lack of a better term, where James Bond is on. So this is how I describe things, by the way. This is not just me acting out the podcast. This is how I just generally describe things in a day-to-day life, is randomly assort them to other things. So, I mean, you kind of have Dagobah, where James Bond is, and he kind of has a kind of mystic-y, godlike thing going on there. But other than that, there's not a ton of fantasy. There's just lots more. Other than the race tropes, because you have, like, the Hawkman, you got the elves, you got but even those are just aliens. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just spanning.
I don't know if it's you or because I've never seen Flash Gordon, but it does sound like you're having a stroke.
The answer to that is yes.
Should we call someone?
Nah, I think it'll be all right.
He's still thinking about John Carter, is what's going on.
No, it's not very. It's definitely more. Definitely more science fiction, because literally all of the things associated with it are explained with science.
Do they explain how the ships fly? Like, is there technology shown as to how they're run?
If you want to call it that, yeah.
Okay. It just seemed very fantastical in the feel of it. Like, I haven't seen the movie in a long time, but the stuff that I remember seemed very fantastical, more than, like, science fiction based.
Well, I mean, even the ships are mostly propelled either with wings or little propulsion jets, you know, 80s sci-fi, 80s low-budget sci-fi.
It's very much like Star Wars. I mean, they don't explain how a ship flies in Star Wars. It's got engines in the back to go fast, but how does an X-wing hover before it takes off it just does. Just move along. Yeah. Nothing to explain here.
I guess we got coddled too much by Star Trek in the 90s and 2000s with their whole techno babble.
No techno babble here.
Yeah. All right, so
not babble, but
let's move on to TV.
I had something to say about the Thor films that you've got listed here.
Okay, yeah, we'll skip Matt, because we had a couple more here, but we're kind of short on time. Let's talk about the Thor films, JF.
I'll just be very quick. The Thor films classifies itself as sci-fi because they invoke what I call the Clark Clause, which is a very, very lazy way of approaching it. saying, oh yeah, what we do, yeah, Norse gods, it's not magic. It's just that, as Arthur C. Clarke says, any technology that's advanced enough is indistinguishable from magic. From that point on, we can do whatever we want in the story. It's a bit lazy narrative, and we probably see that in several other things. We'll see it again later in for when we talk about Doctor Who. As far as I'm concerned, it's too much of a cop-out to make it sci-fi. It's still fantasy because the explanation is just too lazy.
Well, and it's based on North mythology. So, I mean, it starts from a fantasy base.
Yeah, on top of that. Like, the moment someone says life force and wants to pretend that's science and science fiction, it becomes fantasy as far as I'm concerned. And I know it's a preference and all that, but, you know.
No.
All right, competition.
It's in my book, it's more fantasy than sci-fi, so I agree. Okay, television, let's begin with Lost. What are the science fiction, what are the fantasy elements? I know that there's that whole evil versus good element in Lost, the two people that were supposed to represent good and evil. That's kind of fantasy-ish, right?
I'm going to pretend that I've seen more than 3 episodes of Lost.
Okay.
I hated the 3 episodes of Lost that I watched.
Okay. No, I respect that. It's not for everybody.
I loved it.
Really, Matt?
Yeah, I actually...
It's like 2 surprises in 1. First of all, you saw it. Second of all, you loved it.
I've seen the entire thing, and I almost rewatched it because some guy re-edited it so that it's in chronological order. So, like, it actually starts, like, in the middle of the 5th season or something with the brothers.
Really? So they kind of did the thing that they have done with Star Wars, giving you the order of the film, the episodes that you're supposed to watch, to make it more sense.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't like it because I think it kind of took away from the whole point of the show of it just not making any sense for a really long time. But I would say Lost is fantasy. It's not sci-fi just because of how the weird stuff happens in the show. Just in terms of, like, all of a sudden on an island and then there's some black fog and then they find a manhole and then they find an underground base and then all of a sudden they're going back in time and they find a submarine and they're, you know, it's really all over the board, so I wouldn't really call it sci-fi.
Yeah, I think the sci-fi elements would be the technology that, like, the people that were the hatch and the submarine. It's kind of sci-fi-ish, sort of, I guess.
It has sci-fi aspects. It definitely does, but I think if I was going to pick one or the other, I would go with fantasy.
Okay. JF, your thoughts on Lost?
None. I haven't seen much of it, so I'm not in a position to formulate a coherent thought.
Okay. Has anybody seen Warehouse 13?
Yes.
Okay. CJ has to go in about a minute, so let's do a real quick kind of what you think are the fantasy elements, what are the sci-fi elements. CJ, have you seen Warehouse 13?
I've not. I've heard a lot from it. My mother-in-law watches it a lot, but I've not actually seen any.
Okay, let's do this. What's the one thing that on this list, what remains on this list, what's the one thing that you are most into of all this?
I should probably pull up the list.
Well, there's Buck Rogers, Doctor Who, the Stargate franchise.
Oh, Doctor Who is easy.
Quantum Leap. And Fringe.
Okay, let's talk about Doctor Who. Yeah, I know. Sorry, Matt. Let's talk about Doctor Who. CJ has to leave, so let's go out with a bang. Let's talk Doctor Who. Fantasy and sci-fi.
Yeah. Sci-fi, pretty much to its whole. And they try and downplay any kind of fantastical things that they even try and develop in there by sciencing it out. I mean, even over the last 50 years, it's pretty much just been a straight science show in general because, I mean, it started off as a historical educational show and then developed into awesome time-space romp of awesome.
But there's some mysticism. There's some stuff that they don't really explain how it works. Like the whole TARDIS, they don't really explain how it works. It's got a personality.
They do. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Well, also,
that's not an explanation. That is a cop-out. Doctor Who is fantasy. It's awesome fantasy couched, like, wearing a sci-fi costume, but it's fantasy.
this is like it is a speculative fiction show as opposed to a science fiction show. So if we're going to get real detailed on that one, you're right. I mean, they try and science their way out of it, especially the last two doctors, the 11th, the 12th Doctor, because it, Stephen Moffat taking over the show and Sherlock, but.
But that's the thing. They don't try to science it away. They basically – they think something that's fantasy, like a wizard casts a spell and they say, no, that's not magic. That's science. How is it? Don't worry about it. And it's fine. That's what's cool about Doctor Who is that they focus on the issues instead of trying to convince us. And they don't waste precious minutes of character and story development on technobabble.
Yep.
But – at the same time, because they don't, it remains magic, which is – it's fine like
it,
that.
It just works. But, their stuff
yeah,
just
it's,
works.
Yeah, exactly. Like they've got a special formula that's weird, but it's you can't call what they do science because – and I'm going to have every Doctor Who – like there's probably Doctor Who assassins right now converging on my location, but that's just my opinion because
– no, not quite yet.
All right, CJ.
I may or may not have a direct link to them.
CJ, you got to go. So, real quick, yeah. Again, where can people find your stuff online? The podcast network, the book. Tell us.
geek-io.net for everything. If you want to get directly to the book, you can go to geek-io.net/books with an S because that kind of gives the detail of mine and JF's page, and I also kind of hosting for the rest of the Geek.io family because I know a couple of them are writers. Going to be expanding out like the projects that we're doing personally, books, music. We have a few musicians. We have a couple filmmakers on the group, and we're expanding out in that. But really the main thing I want to really push everybody to go to is geek-io.net/books. Help me and JF really live out our dreams of becoming established authors. I mean, his is doing amazing, like seriously really amazing, and I cannot say how proud I am to even be associated with it in any way, shape, or form. Mine needs some help, so, you know, get some word out there. I mean, it's free. It's free if you follow the, like, three easy steps. That's
but if I can add something to it, like right now you and I are really gung-ho because of the Sword and Laser contest that ends on May 31st. But both you and I have a campaign that extends beyond that. So yes. Although if anybody's going to pre-order CJ's book, do it before the 31st because that helps them get to the contest. But if you can't for any reason or you're lazy, and seriously, like it's free, what's your excuse? And you can't do it by the 31st. And when you only listen to this after the 31st, still go pre-order it because the campaign's still going on. And if CJ hits what 750 pre-orders for your digital copies and 1,000 for physical copies,
yes,
yeah. If he hits those numbers, if I hit those numbers, like even if we're not part of the Sword and Laser contest, we still get published, and that's a huge step in the right direction for aspiring authors.
Awesome.
Like, support the freaking arts, guys.
Yes.
Right?
Come on.
And there gets to a point, it's like, all right, you know, and I'm appealing to you all because you're all my personal friends. You know, even if you're not going to read it, it's free. You are literally losing nothing out of this except for posting a thing on social media, which gets the word out even more. Then you can pre-order the book. You can read it when it's done, and you never know. I could turn you on to a genre that you didn't exactly think that you were going to try and get into on your own.
Exactly. Couldn't have said that better myself. CJ Boat, thank you very much for being our guest geek this week. And you got to go, so we'll talk to you later, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Cheers, CJ.
Yeah.
All right, let's just kind of real quick wrap up with our last TV fantasy / sci-fi TV shows. So, Warehouse 13, JF.
All right, I've seen Warehouse 13. It's actually a spin-off of another series called Eureka, which is a bit the same tone. Here's the thing, like this is a good comparison because while Doctor Who does things that are so far out of the realm of science, slaps a science sticker on them and moves along, because they're too busy exploring deeper themes and deeper character arcs. Warehouse 13 is where you're going to get your fantasy dressed as sci-fi that is better sci-fi, if you will. Because although a lot of the stuff feels a bit weird because it's very fringe science that shouldn't be, they do a better job of trying to couch it in a science framework. However, Warehouse 13, although it's fun, it's an interesting series. It's got a good story point. It's not as deep and introspective as Doctor Who can be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good counterbalance, if you will.
And you kind of learn a little bit about world history too, because they throw in like these fantastical explanations for things that we know of.
They bring back historical characters as being the originators of some of their weird science that they use. It's, if you're looking for anything that's close to a steampunk series, Warehouse 13 is totally going to be your jam. However, anything you learn about history in Warehouse 13, don't use in an actual test.
Yeah, yeah.
There will be repercussions.
It's kind of made up.
You'll
a little
fail.
Bit. Yeah.
Because they go to very strange places, which is kind of the theme of the story. Like Warehouse 13, the whole premise is this huge, almost TARDIS-like warehouse that is just gargantuan, that houses all the weird stuff the government accumulates but can't explain and doesn't know what to do with.
And they all do weird things. They all do things that could cause problems, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you guys a serious question. Have either of you seen Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, the TV show from the 1970s?
I saw an episode when I think I was 4 and it scared the bejesus out of me and I never went back.
Okay.
And it was like an octopus in sand that ate a guy. And it just didn't sit well with me.
Matt, I'm guessing no, right?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Let's move on then. Stargate franchise, Stargate SG-1, Stargate Atlantis, Stargate Universe. JF?
Man, Stargate. I love Stargate. Stargate does... It's definitely sci-fi. There's nothing magical. Everything is couched in some kind of scientific thing. Here's something that Stargate does that I have yet to see in any other long-running franchise, which is amazing and cool. You know when you're watching Star Trek and sometimes there's a plot point and you go, wait, couldn't they solve this with the bit of technology that they got 3 episodes ago? Stargate doesn't do that, because every time you ask that question and you say, wait, don't they have a device that could you really solve that problem? The moment you ask that question, they pull out the device. The entire series, especially SG-1, just builds upon the technology as they gather it from their exploration,
mm-hmm.
which lends it really an air of understanding. And it's to the point where as Earthlings gather enough technology, they start building their own sci-fi things. And as you're starting to say, hey, if they're finding all these spaceships and all these things, why aren't they, building their own spaceship? And then, oh, look, there's an episode where they build a spaceship. So it feels almost realistic in the sense that it feels like if we were to have access to alien technology, that is exactly how we'd go about it.
Amen, brother. I agree with you. And I don't know what I was thinking. I was thinking there was some kind of fantasy element, but now that you laid it out there, I don't think there is. I thought the gods, the being, that the thing inside the thing, I thought that was a fantastical element.
The Gwolds?
Yeah.
No, they're parasites. Okay. I don't know how they rose to the top of their food chain, but whatever.
Okay, yeah.
But they don't have any mystical powers.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
And there's been a few episodes where there was, oh, look, there's this alien that has mystical powers, and by the end of the episode, it's like, no, it's just some science.
Okay, one final one, Quantum Leap. A lot of science involved, in my opinion, but the element of him not being, of Sam Beckett, not being able to actually get back to his own time period as himself, that's the fantasy element in Quantum Leap.
I'm willing to accept that as being still in the science portion, being that his technology is such, let's face it, Sam Beckett was a quack, and his technology is such junk that it doesn't work properly, so that's why he can't bring himself back. But in the last episode, don't they have this revelation that it's not the technology, it's God that's making him fix things and turning him into, oh, you're like a time traveling guardian angel?
I don't remember.
That's your fantasy element.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was an actual God thing, but all, like, a whole bunch of the characters that he leapt into during the run of the series was in this bar at the very last episode. And I forget exactly. It's been so long since I watched that episode. I don't remember the details.
Yeah. Well, I remember it being very on and off. Like, you'd have one episode that would be super interesting because, like, he'd leap into, say, a character that was going through some really transformative social episode, and that was interesting. There was some episode, I know they were reviled by most public, but I thought it was interesting, where they had basically an evil leaper, like this girl that would be doing the same thing, but her job, her purpose was actually sabotaging history instead of fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, like, it's discovered that she doesn't necessarily want to do this. And anyway, there's a good storyline around that goes beyond the week per week episodes. But once in a while, there was very often there were gimmick episodes, like, oh, I've leaped into Elvis Presley, and that's the joke. That's the storyline. Everything else is just window dressing.
And he has to say, oh boy, at least one episode, one time per episode, right? That's the requirement?
Usually right before the credits.
Okay.
The starting credits.
My final argument that it is also fantasy is the fact that he has no control over when he leaps. Like, when he thinks he fixed something, he didn't fix something. So it's up to somebody or something else to decide when he leaps. So that's what I'm saying is the fantasy element.
I agree. Like, that that his time machine or whatever forces guiding his time travel has a moral compass and knows when things are quote unquote fixed and then leaps him. That is very fantasy. Like, I don't see why he would have built that kind of thing into his time machine.
Exactly.
Then again, I did say Sam Beckett was a quack, so who knows?
All right, so that's going to do it for this episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Real quick feedback, Imperial Gnome, a.k.a. Daryl Johnson, regarding our conversation last week about space mining movies. On Twitter, he corrected me by saying that Star Trek Deep Space Nine was a ore processing station, not a mining station. But my argument is it was involved in the mining process in a way. It was processing what they dug up.
It's part of the distribution chain.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks, JF. Thanks for being on the guest panel this week. Appreciate you coming on. And good luck in your final week of the Sword and Laser competition on the Inkshares campaign.
Still have a week and a half.
A week and a half.
And, yeah. Man, I'm nervous.
You can do it. Well, you have to be within, what, the top three or the top five?
I have to be in the top five. Right now I'm in second place, so I can't complain. But it's I'm not an outwardly competitive guy. Like, I don't feel the need to crush other people to achieve what I want. Like, I feel that we can all have a piece of the cake. So it's really weird for me to be rooting against people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm eager for that portion to be over with. I hope that when it is, I'm in the top five. There's also, I mean, God, I don't want to badmouth anyone, but there's also some, you know what? No, I won't say anything.
Okay. All right. We'll just leave it at that. Again, it's jfdubo/tadbooks, right?
Yeah, jfdubo.com.
Oh, .com.
/tadbooks.
Okay. All right.
And you'll have the instructions on how to order for free from there. And go check out my book trailer. There's a robot.
Yeah, it's cool. It's really neat. I like it. Not stop motion. What do you call that? A
time lapse.
Yeah, time lapse. Very good. Matt. What do you do? Okay, so to explain a little bit, Matt is the sci-fi curmudgeon. He's not as big of a fan as the rest of us are. So my real question is, when your eyes are glazed over, when you're not really engaged in the podcast, what do you do?
It depends. Like, a lot of times I'll just look at pictures of cats on Reddit. Or if something crosses my mind, like I'll shop on Amazon.
Uh-huh.
Like tonight I bought a new pair of shoes for work. Whatever. I can multitask, so I can pay attention to what's happening and do other things. I just...
No, you're the king at multitasking. I know that by experience. I know it. You're good at that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, JF and Matt, thank you very much for being on the panel this week. And on behalf of Brad, Anessa, and CJ, we will talk to you guys next time.
Bye, Dad.
Cheers, Dave.
Thank you for joining us for another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Did you know you could help support this network financially for as little as $1 a month? Come on, that's less than a cup of coffee. Support this network now at patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. If you liked what you heard, then make sure to subscribe for free on iTunes, Stitcher, or by going to gncasts.com/subscribe. And if you really enjoyed the podcast, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Even better, tell your friends and family about the Sci-Fi Geeks Club from Galactic Netcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Splash Page Podcast, in part brought to you by the Elf Nerds. I'm Gregor Sprague. We love fine debut Spider-Gwen hoodies, leggings, and more. Spider-Gwen, an alternate universe take on Gwen Stacy, where she, not Peter, received powers from a radioactive spider, was an overnight sensation after debuting last year in Marvel's Edge of Spider-Verse number 2, in large part due to the stylish and notably practical costume design by artist Robbie Rodriguez. In what feels like a natural next step, that design has inspired a new collection from fashion-forward, genre-centric clothing merchandiser We Love Fine, consisting of hoodies, leggings, and even a Spider-Gwen patterned cardigan. The collection ranges in prices from $28 for the hooded tank, $37.50 for the leggings, $45 for the sleeved hoodie, and $48 for the cardigan. All are currently available for pre-order and scheduled to ship on September 1st. For those looking to get their Spider-Gwen gear before then, We Love Fine currently has multiple t-shirts starring the character on sale. Community pays homage to Captain America the Winter Soldier elevator scene. The latest episode of Community not only continues its Paintball Assassin series that began with Season 1's Modern Warfare, but also pays homage to the elevator scene from Captain America's The Winter Soldier. In Modern Espionage, which debuted Tuesday on Yahoo Screen, the comedy sends up the spy action genre as the gang is enlisted by Dean Pelton to unmask the paintball assassin Silver Balls before he can ruin the cleaner Greendale Gala. In the scene in question, an unarmed Dean Pelton steps into an empty elevator, only to quickly find himself surrounded by shifty-looking men with paintball guns. That's when panic, the super soldier serum, or his community college administrator training kicks in, resulting in an epic takedown. The homage is even a twofer, as it's also reminiscent of the one in Die Hard with a Vengeance, which probably influenced the sequence in the Marvel sequel. It gets a bit meta too, as Winter Soldier directors Joe and Anthony Russo are executive producers of Community, who have helmed more than 30 episodes between them, including A Fistful of Paintballs. Modern Espionage doesn't stop there, however. You'll notice in the scene that Dean Pelton's codename is the voice of Dietrich Bader. Each key player has a codename that refers to an actor who has played Batman. Jeff is Michael Keaton, Abed is Christian Bale, Annie is Adam West, Elroy is Val Kilmer, and Berta is George Clooney. Community airs Tuesdays on Yahoo Screen. Supergirl pilot leaks 6 months early, but is that a bad thing? Late Thursday evening, the pilot for CBS's much-debated Supergirl series leaked online, almost 6 months ahead of the series' scheduled November debut. Available in 1080p high-def resolution and absent the typical watermarks associated with review copies, Variety reports that the episode has been downloaded 192,000 times as of Friday at 9:30 a.m. Considering the quality of the leak and lack of a watermark usually found on review copies, some, including Forbes, have wondered if this could be a controlled leak set up by CBS or Warner Brothers in order to generate positive buzz for the show. Even with its premiere months away, the show has already scored a positive review from IO9 writer Rob Brecken, who praised the leaked episode. It's worth noting that something similar happened with the CW's Flash pilot last June, although that incident was proven to be the result of legitimate theft. Despite the leak, the episode, which was met with a positive response similar to that of Supergirl's pilot, went on to score the highest rated CW debut in 5 years when the show premiered last October. Warner Brothers and CBS both declined comments when reached by CBR News. I will have a review of the Supergirl pilot, spoiler free, on What Else Is On Monday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern at elsenerds.com. And now the upcoming releases for May 27th, 2015. Dark Horse Comics has Fight Club 2 number 1, Halo Escalation number 18, and Tomb Raider number 16. DC Comics concludes its Convergence series with Convergence number 8, Convergence Blue Beetle number 2, Convergence Booster Gold number 2, Convergence Shazam number 2, and a non-Convergence title, Multiversity Pax Americana Director's Cut number 1. Image Comics has Chew number 49, Invincible 120, Pisces number 2, They're Not Like Us number 6, and Wayward number 8. Marvel Comics has Black Widow number 18, Secret Wars tie-in Inferno number 1, Infinity Gauntlet number 1, MODOK Assassin number 1, Old Man Logan number 1, Secret Wars 2099 number 1, and Secret Wars Journal number 1. This has been the Splash Page Podcast, in part brought to you by the Else Nerds. We'll see you next time.
You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.GalacticNetcasts.com.